Hello, this is Robert Rickover at Body Learning. And today my guest is Jean Doe Massaero, an Alexander Technique teacher in Montpellier, France. And we are having a series of conversations about the influence of François Delsarte, and more specifically, his younger brother Camille Delsarte, who lived many years in Tasmania, on F. Matthias Alexander and the Alexander Technique. Jean Doe, welcome to the show again.
Hello.
Hello again. In our last conversation, we spent a lot of time talking about Alexander and Delsarte's use of mirrors. And it was a fascinating discussion. And if you haven't heard it while you're listening to this, you might want to go back to that first. But the big picture I got out of what we talked about in the last conversation or two has been that Alexander was certainly strongly influenced by François Delsarte's ideas as channeled to him via Camille Delsarte, via then many actors he Camille trained in Australia, and as I've said before, Alexander was himself a teacher of the Delsarte method. He advertised himself as such in Australia, and in fact, his wife was in fact influenced by Camille Delsarte. And I'd like to, and one of the things I get from this is that there's a really kind of a gold mine of material to be gleaned from Alexander's writings. If you, in a way, if you understand that connection and are willing to, in a sense, follow Alexander's own experiments using the mirror, for example. Would you agree with that?
Yes.
I mean, that was how you came, in a sense, discovered this. You actually set up mirrors and, in a sense, try to almost replicate what Alexander did, right?
Yes, I wanted to know if it was possible or not to change a bad use of the self into what he called a good use of the self, using only conscious guidance, which is not using hands-on. Imagine you're lost on an island, and there is no Alexander teachers around. You're on your own, and suddenly you get the use of the self or man's supreme inheritance. You read it and you say, okay, this man is saying that conscious guidance, that the capacity to reason things out will help me in order to change my scoliosis. Is that exactly what he wants? Yes. Let's see. Is that possible?
And let's hope that along with the book came at least a couple of mirrors, right? Or that there were some on the island. Because that seems to be a pretty important part of this process.
Well, if there is no mirror on the island, I'm sorry, sir, but you won't be able to do anything in order to help yourself.
Well, one could argue with that, maybe, but
I know.
But if you want to follow Alexander's own path through this, you really are going to need at least two mirrors, right?
Absolutely. That's what you you just only read the evolution of a technique. It's the explanation that Alexander gave about how he came about to create this technique. They are very fairly important.
So if you have that first chapter, you don't even need the whole book, just the first chapter and two mirrors, and you got plenty of time on your hands, you could replicate Alexander's discoveries, right?
Yes,
I think that's true. Now and just to reiterate from our earlier conversation, for a long time, we don't know exactly how long, Alexander did not use his hands to help his students.
That's clear.
So given that history, what are the implications of that history, which is somewhat, well, not just somewhat, it was pretty strong revision from the classic Alexander story that you see on many teachers' websites, for example, and in books. Mm-hmm. What are the implications of this new history, or this revised, I believe, corrected history, for Alexander teachers and students today?
Mm-hmm.
Not 2016, to be precise.
2016 today, yes.
Yeah.
Well, for us teachers, well, I've been trained like you have in a STAT training school. And for us, what it means, the first thing that it means is questions, very, very interesting questions.
Mm-hmm.
That there are some parts of the history that we have taken for granted, that there was a myth created around the discovery of the technique that has, in fact, veiled our eyes. We have been blind to the books. Because mm-hmm. the first thing that I noticed as a translator of Alexander is... what happens when people writing about the technique, how do they quote Alexander? Mm-hmm. And what do they quote? For the first thing that is so surprising when you come from outside is that there is very, very little quoting of Alexander in books about the Alexander technique. There is very, very few mentions of the text, you know. Mm-hmm. So
there are little snippets that are pulled out.
Well, yeah,
he does have a penchant for kind of pithy remarks.
Yes, but these are not in his books, really. Most of the time, the one that are called.
Yeah.
Are coming from article and lectures, from what his secretary did put down on a paper.
His aphorisms.
They are not even the sentences that are constructed in the books with the whole effort he put to create a vast explanation. No. It's not that. So that's the first thing. So the first question that comes out of all this presence of Del Sarre that is new, and is, first of all, that we should unveil our eyes and go back and read Alexander in a different way. Mm-hmm. You know, I hope that people will read Evolution of the Technique and will try to see when mirrors are appearing, what he's doing with the mirror, what he's checking, what the mirrors will let him direct him to change what he had thought would work and didn't. Mm-hmm. It was the mirror was part of the reasoning to evolve the orders, to evolve the directions, to evolve everything. So mm-hmm. When you listen to this, it might sound a bit extreme, but I invite people just to go and read again. And maybe they have read the Evolution of a Technique already 100 times. So maybe to read the Evolution of a Technique 101st time, that is this one, mm-hmm. but with the commentary that we have been producing together, mm-hmm. then they will suddenly realize that what the books are telling, what the books are about. That's the first thing, and then the second is a question about why were we not trained to read the books properly?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it was because no one started it, so there should be someone out there to say, "Okay, I'm going to start and to make a reading, a true reading and true commentary." The words of Alexander, and not make another website where always exactly the same idea, the mainstream idea, is repeated, the freedom of and the opening and everything and the release and all that. No, go back. I think that's fair to say. It's interesting to, it's, well, my approach here comes from the fact that I've studied quite a number of modern pedagogy in order to change the use of the self, or the to change Feldenkrais and also Gerda Alexander and many, many different things. And one thing that is so special about our position is that we really have a text. We have a textbook of the Alexander technique. The work that Alexander has produced, to my eyes, is immense. These four books, for me, they constitute, when I said a gold mine, I could say a diamond mine. Of course, you need to start and get your shovel and your pick and then your axe and then start hammering at words, and because he's not the best writer we know about, that's for sure. But this man is talking about practical things. And I think it's most of the time the truth.
Well, it's interesting that you would say that, and I agree that the books are underappreciated. I will say that Marjorie Barstow, a teacher who influenced me quite a bit, was very big on the books. I mean, the surest way to get a turn during a class with her is to say, "Hi, Marge, I want to read something from Use of the Self," or something. She would just light up, you know. And she often said that first chapter of Use of the Self was the most important thing. I don't know if she said it was the most important or for her it was the most important chapter he ever wrote. And she was actually around when that book was being written and the proofreading was going on. She said that's the one he really, really edited and re-edited. He wanted to get the wording just so. And she also said, interestingly enough, that in that chapter, for her, the most important sentence was where he says something to the effect, "And there's so many other things I tried, I don't have time to put them here." Yes. But she did not zero in on the mirror, I'll have to say. She didn't have any mirrors in her home where she taught, any teaching mirrors of any kind. Whether or not she explored this work in front of a mirror earlier on, I have no idea. But I don't remember the topic of mirrors ever coming up with her, which is interesting. But she was a huge devotee of the books, and especially Use of the Self.
Yeah, so, I concur. I think she's absolutely right. And I think we've been misguided in thinking that there were old things, rusty and not, well, that the technique had evolved and now we were far away from these old things. Right. I think that has been a very, very big mistake. Well, because that's what I've seen. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe in different parts of the world, I've never been to the States, for example, so I don't know how the teaching is going on.
I don't think, from what I know, you'd see any difference here in that regard. But you know, there's another point that I'd like to make. I mean, having listened to you talk about Delsarte's influence and so on, and we mentioned this. I mentioned this at the beginning of this podcast. But this is the fact that Alexander got these ideas from Delsarte, or indirectly through various channels from Delsarte, is not just not a condemnation of him. It's, to me, it actually makes him a much more appealing person, because the classic version of the discovery is this lone, unlettered genius working on his own for God knows how many years, 9 years, 10 years, living in the middle of nowhere, you know, at the very edge of the British Empire, without any knowledge of anything else going on in the world, and out pops this amazing thing. And it was such a job to get it that if you today want to become a teacher of the Alexander Technique, you're going to have to really, really apply yourself for years and years. And that may well be true, but it isn't like he did something so spectacular. It's that he had this information, he used it, he was, as you've said, probably the best exponent of Delsarte's ideas, but he was in no sense operating in a vacuum. He was surrounded by people who knew about Delsarte and probably a lot of other things as well, because even in the 1880s and 90s, there was the Royal Mail, right?
Oh, yeah.
That got as far as Australia. And for all we know, he may have known about Stanislavski, for example, who was writing in that period. He may have known all kinds of other things. He was not out there on some desert island working on his own for many hours a day for 10 years, not at all. And as you said, the timeline for his discovery, and between the time he started working on himself and where he felt he was okay to do some teaching, was something in the order of, I think you said, 8 months.
Yes.
It's certainly no more than a year or two. I mean, the timeline doesn't make it possible.
Doesn't make it possible. His age doesn't mean it either.
So it makes him and his discoveries a lot more accessible to people.
Yeah.
You're not when you go as a student taking Alexander lessons, you're not getting this thing that took this guy forever to come up with, and this teacher who has spent this incredible amount of time learning stuff, transmitting it to you. You're getting good stuff, but you're not getting stuff that's superhuman.
Yes.
You're getting stuff that, in fact, under the right circumstances, you could figure out for yourself.
But maybe we need to, I will add something. May I? Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Okay. There is another consequence of all this for modern teachers. Mm-hmm. We have to change our business plans because we have been on the idea that, at least 3 years of full training is necessary to become an Alexander teacher. Mm-hmm. Of course, Alexander never did that amount of time of practice before starting to teach. Mm-hmm. So that's quite, first of all, it's quite strange.
And AR apparently had six lessons.
Six lessons.
With no hands-on.
With no hands-on. So it's interesting to hear that. And suddenly it was, but that's impossible. You know, what that's heresy. Mm-hmm. Well, it's heresy certainly, but it's from the founders. So, it's quite interesting. So change the business plan, the business model, mean that we've been working for a very long time in a business of poverty. In a business of poverty, what you do, you have very few students, very few pupils, very few customers, I would say. And what you try to do when you try catch for how long as you can, and you try to make them pay as much as you can, as much as they can afford. That's the business of poverty. Imagine now that the technique is much more powerful than we thought it was, that it's much that the student can learn it with a mathematical precision in much less time. Mm-hmm. Which say, well, for example, let's say a student has six lessons. Mm-hmm. And that's brilliant. Mm-hmm. And then he gets so much out of six lessons that he will speak about with his grandma, that he's having rheumatism, and he's speaking with his wife, and he's speaking with his friends, and he's speaking with everybody. And you get in a very different economy where instead of capturing very, very few people, you are open to give few lessons to a great number of people.
Mm-hmm. So, hey, we're in controversial territory here, but I totally agree with that. And I think we're going to do another podcast on the implications of all this history of Alexander, development of his work, what it means for distance learning, Skype teaching, for example. But just to kind of preface that, it's been my experience that Skype teaching is where you don't have hands and you've got to rely on thinking, working with people's thinking, is way, way more efficient often than in-person lessons.
Yeah, it's strange, isn't it?
It's weird. It caught me off guard when it first manifested itself. But we're going to leave that for another day. But just we're getting onto kind of the time range for podcasts. But is there anything else you want to say just generally about the implications of all of this early stuff for us today?
Yes, I will make a last statement. Mm-hmm. It's a technical statement because nowadays we have such tools that are fantastic. I will tell you about one tool that most people have missed because of the fact they didn't read evolution of the technique openly enough, I would say. Well, When you have a Skype lesson with someone, let's say I give a Skype lesson to a pupil, okay? Mm-hmm. So I'm here in France and the pupil is in Australia or the States or anywhere. We have a meeting together and the person is seeing me for the first time. Mm-hmm. And she's not much seeing me because, in fact, she's sitting on a chair sideways.
Right.
So that her camera is filming her when she's from the side, you see?
Right. Yep.
So she's not seeing me, she's just hearing a voice.
Right.
You know, mm-hmm. It's quite eerie. So what happened is that she receives instructions. Or instructions mm-hmm. of doing some sort of a movement of some parts she didn't even knew she could be moving mm-hmm. relatively mm-hmm. to another one, okay? Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. at first she said, no, it's impossible, this. So I agree. I say, yes, I understand what you mean. You can't feel it. You don't feel mm-hmm. that it's possible. She said, yes, I can't feel it's possible. I say, well, let's say that maybe it could work in a different way. Maybe you could direct with your mind, with your mental ability to understand instructions and then to... But she said, but I can't feel what it will do. I said, well, exactly. Let's make that as an experiment. Mm-hmm. When she's working from Skype, I can take a picture of her. Mm-hmm. And send it to her. But now I found something, technical prowess of the modern technical computers, is that I record the lesson from my side.
Mm-hmm.
So when mm-hmm. I record the lesson from my side, what you get is a magical mirror of what is happening. It's a magical mirror because when I send the lesson to the lady, she received the thing, she opened it, and she watched herself receiving verbal instructions mm-hmm. and creating a new geometry with different parts, okay?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And she sees itself. She sees herself reacting to it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a mirror that has a memory, and it's also a mirror that stores the instruction, the voice that is pronouncing the instruction. So she will learn by heart. Because as she watches the video, she will learn the instructions. Because there is one problem that people don't think about, is that when the teacher gives a very, very structured lesson with instructions that are very well organized together, so that when the pupil is going to have these instructions in mind, she will, in fact, be able to create a new structure with her geometry, with her practical will. Mm-hmm. But in fact, when the lesson is finished and she's alone, then what happened is that we discover that she has forgotten the instruction, or she has maybe not the instruction, but she has forgotten how the instruction related to one another. Because mm-hmm. the teacher was very, very clever in producing a structured instruction that will relate four or five different movements of different parts together.
Mm-hmm.
And so She discovered then that projecting direction is a big problem of memory.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And she needs then a new thing. She needs to control her own mind in order to become herself able to produce the verbal direction in their correct order, in order for her, that we, what we know is that she's able, when she receives the instructions in correct order, we can see that on film, she's able to lengthen the spines quite beautifully.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
From the first, yeah, from the word go, from the first lesson.
Yeah.
Doesn't, but the fact that she's able to do that is very satisfying, but it's just a surface of the technique. The mm-hmm. real technique is when the person starts to control her own memory, which is her own mind, the way she talks to herself.
Mm-hmm.
She's starting to have conscious constructive control over speech.
Mm-hmm.
All that
mm-hmm.
because now we have mirrors that are fantastic. So Skype lessons is just evolution of a technique with a technical guest.
Absolutely. And we're going to do a podcast about Skype teaching in more detail. But I think the way your teaching method differs probably significantly from mine. But what it has in common is putting the first of all, of course, neither of us are using our hands when we teach. That's a big
yeah.
thing in common. But also, we're both working with the student's thinking process.
Yes.
And when you really commit to doing that, and I think this is the big takeaway from all of this Delsartean influence on Alexander and understanding Alexander's early days of teaching, when you really approach things in that way, people can change amazingly fast. People learn to use what the suggestions you give them pretty quickly.
Exactly.
And
I agree totally.
Yeah. And I think you and I are giving different suggestions, and we're going to do a Skype exchange soon. But the basic idea is, yeah, if you're really working with someone thinking, things go pretty fast.
Yes, very. That's the definition Alexander explained. He said, well, the subconscious system, you have to repeat and repeat and repeat to engrave the lesson. While with the conscious thinking, it's so quick.
Yeah.
It's so fast.
Yeah.
You say, oh, yes, that's it.
Yeah,
oh.
Yeah, exactly.
I remember I had a very, very good, I had a student one day, and he made such a nice comment. And you know what it was? He said, what? But it is that simple?
Yeah, or a very, just in general, because I tend to work with people's thinking in regular lessons a lot too. And a lot of people will say, well, you know, I keep waiting for some exercises. and they don't ever happen, but yet good things are happening. So, yeah, let's end the conversation here, if that's okay with you.
That's fine by me. Thank
Great.
You very much.
So once again, my guest today has been Jean Doe Masaero. He is an Alexander Technique teacher in Montpellier, France. Thanks.